your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Metaphysical, paranormal, you know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on, because life is an adventure, and this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Welcome to the show, everyone. This is Jen Cruz, and this is the Journey Radio Show. It is Wednesday night, and tonight I've got Clayton Crawford on the line with me. He is my co-host tonight. Hey, Clayton, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
You know, I can hear you. I can't see you, but I can hear you. Are you sitting up?
No, I am trying to get my charger connected so my phone doesn't die.
All right. Well, you can do with that. I'm going to introduce our very special guest. She is back with us again. It's the one and only Andrea Perrin. Hi, Andrea. Are you there?
I am. Thanks so much for inviting me back.
I am so excited you wanted to come back and do a live question and answer with the people in the chat room tonight. And for those who are just tuning in, and if you've been living under a rock and you don't know who Andrea Perrin is, let me tell you that if you ever saw the movie The Conjuring, that movie was loosely based on her true story. She was one of those children in that story, but that was her true story. And so she's with us tonight. She has lots of different topics that she could talk about. She could talk about growing up in that situation. She could talk about UFOs and extraterrestrials and the galactic family. She can talk about all the different kinds of things, and the choices are up to you guys in the chat room. So bring on the questions. I know Audrey's in there. She's probably ready with her keyboard with all the questions. So I'm glad to see that the sound and the chat are working together for Daniel in there. Let's see. Oh, they were giving him instructions. And Clay did make it. He's here, Audrey. Yes, she's asking that. I know that Audrey's going to ask right off the bat, like she asked, I think it was the last show that you were on, she was asking about if you could talk about the Fae.
As in the fairy world?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. But before I start that, let me suggest that I have erroneously posted all over the internet that people could call in to the show tonight. And by the time I realized that they have to log in and get into the chat room in order to ask me questions, it was too late to go back.
Oh, no.
And change all of that. So apparently I did not do my due diligence, and I thought that they could actually call into the show. So it was certainly not done deliberately, but anybody that's out there listening, if you do have any questions, just log in and join in the chat room. And I'm sure over the course of an hour, we can absolutely get to everybody. Audrey, I love you, darling. I hope you are well. Such a sweet, sweet woman. I used to think, all right, I'm going to say something about this subject that I've not said publicly before. I have not put this out in any way to anybody. It's been an experience of mine that I did not know how to. I'm still in the process of processing it. So I have not spoken about it in any interview setting on television or radio since it occurred. I used to think that fairies were like Tinkerbell in Disney, an absolutely charming, wonderful, literal fairy tale. That, as you know, as I've said about Bigfoot, you know, show me a carcass, you know, after all this time and all this hunting and all this searching and all these imprints and all the, you know, if this is not an interdimensional being, if it exists at all, then we would have a carcass by now. It seems to me, that just seems logical to me. So, you know, I don't know about Bigfoot. And the same way I didn't know about fairies, and I thought fairies were just this fascinating folklore tale of old Irish, you know, kind of like Rumpelstiltskin category, you know, just, although I have discovered that there really are trolls in the world. Oh, I'm sorry. I am the only one. I think I'm the only one that got that joke. But anyway, and then one night last year, I saw a ball of light appear in a palm tree across the street from my house, directly across from the front. We have a beautiful front terrace. Lots of flowers and places to sit. And I saw a light in the tree that I couldn't explain. And it was moving. And it looked like it was fluttering a few times. And then about a year later, two of them showed up in the adjacent palm tree across in my neighbor's front yard. And they were literally flying in and out of the tree, and I saw a wing base. And I know, based on the messaging that I received around that and the interaction that occurred. Is that Clayton? Is that Clayton making background noises? It is. It is. No.
Could that be a chime from the fairy realm?
Clayton, you can't undo that, okay? Now people are going
to
mothership. All right, just settle down, sit up, pay attention in class, for God's sake.
get him.
So I saw something that was very small, maybe no more than 6, 8, 12 inches tall, maybe. With a wingspan at least the length of its body. And I saw it close enough that I think that it's safe for me to assume that it was extraterrestrial in nature. And so now I believe in fairies.
Yay! That's awesome. So when we say fairies or the fae realm, you know, I think of gnomes and, you know, of course, the traditional fairies, and then the things that look like Dobby from Harry Potter. Yeah. What do you think of those types of creatures?
I think that the human imagination is an incredible thing. But I also think, and I can't for the life of me remember who said it. I think it was Ray Bradbury or Gene Roddenberry. It was somebody with a Berry name. Or Isaac Asimov. It could have been him too. One of those three, I think, said that if we can conceive it, it already exists somewhere in the universe, in the multiverse. And the implication being that all of our DNA is all mixed up in our ancient memory. And I have a friend of mine who has astral projected to a place where dragons do exist. And, you know, he swears he'd been there and come back to a different planet. I know a number of people that have had those experiences where they have traveled to places where, you know, animals that we think of as extinct on this planet actually live on elsewhere. I would love to know that that's true. You know, I would. I would love to know that that's true. I mean, think about how magical that would be to leave this planet and go to another and have a whole new experience with all the life forms and all the, you know, it's fascinating to think about, to ponder. You know, but none of us know that for sure, because again, the human imagination is so vibrant and so alive and so electrically charged with imagery that we don't understand or know the source of. So we speculate and every now and then we'll have a little experience that validates us, but the truth is we don't know for certain what's all that's out there. And we don't know what our minds are truly capable of. I think it's the greatest machine ever invented is the brain. But the mind is separate and distinct. The mind is not housed in the brain. It is, I think, one mind, divine mind, infinite intelligence, and that we tap into that in the same way that I suspect that we all tap into the same soul base. You know, that there is one soul, that we are all a piece and part and parcel of it. All is one. And if energy is what we are, we're a manifestation of energy, then it's all completely integrated. Everything is one thing. So I guess the most direct answer to your question is I don't know. I don't know. I wish I did. I mean, I really do. I wish I did. You know, I wonder if so many of the mysteries that we deliberately stumble over during the course of our learning in this life is part of the plan to help us evolve as individuals, and that we're not supposed to necessarily have answers to all of these questions, that the question itself is integral to our spiritual growth and our understanding and our own personal evolution. So I guess that would be my answer to that.
Okay. Audrey says, reading your trilogy, House of Darkness, House of Light, you make us aware that then you saw and felt spirits. Now doing the paranormal things that you do, do you still see and feel them places other than the farmhouse?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, my God, yes. Yes. That would be yes in capital letters and neon.
I'm picking up that you're saying yes.
Yeah. You are so perceptive. Blows my mind. Poof.
It's called psychic. We're on the same wavelength. On the same wavelength.
Well, you know, people who have listened to me lecture and, you know, different interviews and stuff are aware that I've said frequently that once you're touched by spirit, you never get untouched. You never unhear or unsee or unlearn or unfeel what that experience is like. And that once that door is opened, it cannot be closed again. It can be ignored. It can be ignored. You can turn your back on it. But eventually something's going to reach through and tap you on the shoulder and remind you of its presence in inexplicable ways. I am so open and embracing of the experience. There's no fear around it for me at all. Sorry, that was my computer that just dinked. I can't blame Clayton for that. Or maybe I could blame Clayton for that. Could you turn your Facebook off, mister?
Oh, we can blame Clayton for everything tonight. It's okay.
Yes.
It's okay. Audrey blames me for everything.
I know. She told me. So, I forgot what I was saying. Isn't that awful? I got right off track.
It's all about Clayton.
It's Clayton's fault. He distracted me.
Well, Audrey has another question. She says, have you ever not wanted to go into a place because you picked up something you didn't like about it?
Yes. Yes. Or I can say that I've been to places that I don't ever want to go back to. Two of them in particular. One of them is Pennhurst Asylum in eastern Pennsylvania, not too far outside Gettysburg. And I went there and did an investigation, an overnight investigation with George, my co-author on In a Flicker. And, you know, he's just an excellent paranormal investigator. I mean, just as grounded and, you know, rooted in fact and the technology around it and all of that. I mean, he's really, really good at what he does. And we had some experiences there that night that were really mind-blowing. One in particular, when we set up the whole, I guess there were maybe 25, 30 people on this investigation. It was a very select group, and they kept it, you know, a manageable number. And we were in one of the buildings where the children's playroom was, and when he set up his spirit box, and they had two Pandoras, you know, gadgets, and when we went in there, he asked the spirits, he introduced me, and said, is there anyone out there that knows what film is associated with Andrea's story? And The Conjuring came through these devices so clearly that it sounded like a disembodied voice in the room.
Wow.
And, you know, the implications of that are staggering. And if it's extrapolated out, it makes one question what exactly the spirit realm is privy to, and are they so integrated with us that they know virtually everything that's going on in our lives? Or was there a collective group consciousness that was so pervasive in that room with those people that it was literally projected through these devices in terms of an answer to a question everyone in the room knew? I mean, you can play with this for hours, you know, in terms of going through it intellectually, cerebrally, dealing with that. But I won't ever go back to Pennhurst. And the reason that I won't is because I know now what happened in that place to so many innocent people who lived their lives in absolute misery and torture in that facility before it was finally closed down by the state. And the oppressiveness, the heaviness, the sadness of that location was palpable. It was so visceral. It was so draining. I don't think I've ever been that tired in my entire life as I was driving back with George that night, or that morning. I mean, it was sunrise when we were on our way back to Gettysburg and then had a whole day of events ahead of us. That was insane. I thought I was going to die. I will never go back to Pennhurst. I've seen it. I've been there once. That's it. Once is enough. George also, you know, I don't know why all this negative stuff's got George in it, but it does. And he took us, a whole group of people, out to a place in the Ocala National Forest that is literally now a ghost town. It is an abandoned, very, very small, desolate, remote community. And I had an experience there. I did something foolish that night too. being protective of a younger female in the group, encountering a spirit that was just abhorrent. I basically told him, if you have a problem, you know, take it up with me. Big mistake, not something I would ever do again. And I had an encounter there that leads me to be able to state unequivocally that I will never go back there. So, yes, I've had some experiences that have, but not at the farm. Okay. Not at the farm.
Well, Jolene asks, I'd like to know how you deal with people who don't really believe what you guys went through in the farmhouse.
I don't care.
I knew it.
Love it.
That's the way to be.
I'm not here for them. I'm not here to convince anyone of anything. You want to follow me? You want to listen to my lectures? You want to hear the true story behind the movie? You know, it's up to you whether or not you buy into it. I'd rather swallow my tongue than lie to somebody about any of this or anything else.
Good job.
You know, it's honesty is always the best policy in life across the board, not just about ghosts and spirits.
There you go.
And, you know, so I speak my truth. I speak my peace. And if somebody is interested in learning more about it or exploring it or engaging with me on the subject, that's fine. And I mean, you know, I go to paranormal conferences. I've never had somebody walk up to me and say, I don't believe in spirits. Well, first of all, how stupid, you know, would you pay to go to one of these things that you don't believe in? You know, I totally get skeptics. I don't have any tolerance for cynics. That's a whole different thing. You know, I find by and large people are generally open-minded, very often fascinated, but a lot of the people that I encounter in my travels around the country have had legitimate experiences of their own that so profoundly and fundamentally changed them in the way that they look at the world and specifically life and death and the afterlife, that I don't have to convince them of anything. They already know, and that's why they seek me out.
Mm. So Daniel likes to know, when he's off in the woods exploring and then feels a presence or feeling like something is really watching him, he wonders, do you think that's some kind of energy?
Yes. You know, and we're all surrounded by energy and the spirits of our loved ones and our ancestors all the time. You know, it's like when somebody says, George said to me one time, let's go hunting for UFOs and take a field trip. And I said, the only thing you need to do is go, you know, step into the field behind your house. You know, you don't have to go someplace to interact or engage with the galactic family. They're right here, omnipresent all the time. All you have to do is open up your heart. You know, it doesn't have anything to do with your mind. It has to do with your heart. And once you make that connection and there's that trust, then the communication flows so beautifully and peacefully. And the same thing is true, I think, for the spirits. And the vast amount of spirits that are around us are completely benevolent and in fact love us. And that is also true of the extraterrestrials. So it really, you know, the common denominator here is love. The common denominator here is being open and feeling that inner part of you, that core of you that's attached to all else, and tearing down every barrier that you've ever put up, whether that's fear-based carbon unit thinking or that's a fascination that you are concerned might become an obsession. Let go of all of that, all of it. If you want to communicate with spirit, talk to them. If you want to communicate with the galactic family, talk to them. Embrace them. Open them. Be known to me. Come hither. Let's go. Let's do this. It's that easy. It is that easy. There's nothing more simple than connecting with the energy that created us.
Andrew, I have a couple questions for you.
I can't talk to you, Clayton. I can't, because you haven't been paying attention in class. You brought your phone. You've been playing with it. I can see you, and I know that you have been pushing buttons and, you know, futzing around with the phone.
I'm in chat.
Instead of paying attention. Oh, you're monitoring the chat room. Oh, okay. I guess that's a little different.
Okay, so, what does that do to you physically when you hear, feel, see dark energy, negative, nasty energy?
It repels me. I fold into myself. I get angry. I feel defensive. I don't feel threatened. I feel threatening.
Right.
I feel like I'm countering that.
Same here.
You know, I mean, nothing negative really dares get around me, because I will blind it with my light.
Right. And I was just about to ask you this. Like, when it's really, really negative, do you feel yourself just explode in light?
Yeah, but I have to withdraw from it first. I have to withdraw from it first. Get away from it physically, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually. Not like a turtle pulling into its shell, but by literally creating boundaries and barriers of protection around myself first, and then I turn on the beacon.
Have you ever had anybody, like I pulled into a gas station one day, and I immediately sensed this gentleman who was also at the gas station, and he went into the gas station. His energy was really negative, really dark. And as I was walking into the gas station to pay for my gas, he was coming out, and he stopped in his tracks, looked at me, and then walked way around my energy field like he was afraid to come into it.
Good. Keep that
like
up.
Like it was painful.
Good.
And I picked up that he felt my energy was painful to him, and that was just so bizarre that he was afraid to come near me. And that's the first time that happened, where I felt their fear of coming near my energy. And that, have you had that happen?
Oh, yes. 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 I've had a number of people in my life offer me a wide girth. And that's perfectly fine, because I'm kind of dangerous like that.
Yeah.
I really am kind of badass like that. I really am. And I know people don't, Clayton, don't smile. Just read the chat questions. Don't be interacting like this. You makes me laugh, and then I get distracted. And I guess the best way for me to explain it is that I have no tolerance. I have neither the time nor the tolerance for that kind of energy in my life. And when something feels toxic to me, it's not long before it's gone. And I will, you know, I've got a friend who is constantly reminding me that I have a lot of codependent people around me, that's their natural bend. That they're like energy vampires. They just want to suck me dry and get as much of my attention as they can and get as much of my approval as they can, and that type of thing. And I have to set him straight on that, because I have the relationships in my life I do not consider codependent. I consider them integrated, and that's different. And you know, they're just as important to me as they are to the person on the other end of the phone or the other end of the world on Skype or, you know, in my parlor. They're just as important to me as I am to them. I don't think that that qualifies as codependency. I think that that's actually very healthy. When you can sit with someone and talk about this subject openly with them, when the relationship itself has been described by a third party as codependent, then I think that it supersedes that prior description. And actually causes the friendship to evolve further because of the exploration of the concept. And then there are people that, try as I might, it's not going to work. It's just not. And, you know, when those breaches occur and those connections are broken, I have a lot of people in my life that will remind me that I'm not here for everyone, and not everyone is here for me, and not everyone is going to come and stay in my life for the rest of my life. I'm aware of that, but it's still painful, you know, because when you emotionally invest in someone and you take the time to get to know them, and then you realize that you have juxtaposed mindsets about, you know, all the important stuff in life, that's painful to, you know, make that break. I just recently had it happen. And I thought that we were past it. I really did. I thought that we were past the argument. We were past the problem and we were past it. And then it rose up to the surface today. I had another discussion with my good friend Lynn today about this is a very important, pivotal, critical time, a point of critical mass in terms of human spiritual evolution. And a lot of what's happening right now is that everything that is toxic and poisonous and icky is rising to the surface to be cleared. A lot of people have approached me and said, have basically mimicked back to me without me knowing what their circumstances are, that a lot of old stuff that they thought that they had handled, processed, and made go away a long time ago is resurfacing, which means it wasn't gone, it was just buried. And now this is the time for clearing, for the cleansing to occur, so that we can go to the next level, so that we can begin to interpret our emotions not based on a history that is dead and gone, but on the now and on what we're able to create in terms of raising the vibration, resonating with each other, changing the frequency of the planet. You know, this is all big, big picture stuff. This isn't about, you know, I don't like you because you said that. It's like, you know, can we work together to enhance the feelings of love and peace and hope and friendship? And can we do that? If the answer is yes, come with me, take my hand, you know, come with me, because there is power in numbers. And when we're all focusing our mind in a very focused, that's redundant, targeted way, in terms of our thinking, in terms of shunning what is destructive, and giving rise to what is creative and beautiful and lovely. It takes effort. It's just easier. It takes more muscles to frown, and yet it's easier. You know, we're all in this together. We're all in this together. We are. We have to raise each other up. We have to lift each other up. We have to come to an understanding that we're in our lives, in each other's lives, for a reason. Let that reason be revealed in love. And that's pretty much what I would have to say about that.
Wonderful. And with that, we're going to have to go to our break. We'll be back in 2 minutes, everybody. Stay tuned.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
It's time to learn your real talents. Learn what to focus on, then change your perspective. Regain those divine intentions. Be empowered by what life throws at you. They are Psychic Little T and Jennifer Green, Nashville's astrologer. Tune in and discover who you really are and set free your passions. Get comfortable with the uncomfortable. Then you can follow your passions with renewed energy. May your journey be one of divine wonder to get where you want to be. Come aboard. They are Jennifer Green, Nashville's astrologer, and Psychic Little T. Every Thursday night from 7 till 8 p.m. Eastern, right here on Para-X Radio.
It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead. People find themselves dead and endure the mock funerals and mournful obituaries. And there they stand, looking out the window, sound and well, in some new and strange disguise. This secret must be told to the world, and they must tell it. Because they're not dead, we know this, and we'll prove it. So join Mike and Dave every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for the Odyssey Files. Only on Para-X.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is Jen Cruz, and this is The Journey Radio Show. When we are not live on the air, you can find us online at thejourneyradioshow.com. And hey, please check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/thejourneyonradio. And I'm also the leader of the She Squatchers, so check us out online at shesquatchers.com and on Facebook, facebook.com/shesquatchers. Official. And remember, She Squatchers Official is how you can find our YouTube channel. So please go find us and check us out there too. And we're back tonight with Andrea Perrin. And she's got, I can see her. She has a lovely little furry friend who is just preciously cute. I'm so jealous. Who is this friend?
This is Sammy. We call Sam I Am, Pepperoni, Muppet. He's got 100 names. He answers to all of them. He just came up. I opened the door for a moment. He came flying out of his Grammy's room. But now he's going to go back to bed because it's late and it's past your bedtime. So go with your Grammy. Isn't he precious?
He's so cute.
A few days before my sister April was supposed to have her surgery for her neck, she had collapsed discs that were agonizing to her. She had degenerative spinal disease. And she came down here to Mom and Christine, and she left Sammy with them for when she was going to be in the hospital. But of course, she never made it to the hospital because her prescription drugs for her condition killed her the night before her surgery. And so Sammy now lives with Mom and Christine and me when I'm here. And Auntie Cindy is just down the road. So he has a big, extensive family of love. Oh, my God, we just love him to pieces. And, you know, he's our closest physical connection to April because she saved him. And he has separation anxiety a bit because, of course, he was devoted to April and she was devoted to him. And she left and never came back. So when we go out to go grocery shopping, it's very emotionally taxing for him. And he's only really, really, really happy when everyone's home with him, loving on him and letting, you know, you're just making him feel secure. But he is the most precious, sweet little boy. And we love him with all our hearts. And there are many times he has helped us so tremendously to get past through this first year since April's passing, because when we're spending time with him and holding him, the connection to her is very strong, very strong. And many, many times we feel her presence in the room while we're cuddling with him. So he's kind of a conduit for her spirit. And so I wanted you to meet him tonight before he went back to bed with Grammy.
Aw, thank you for sharing him with us. Thank you.
I wish it was live video for everybody to see him, but a lot of my followers have seen him because I've been doing some live Facebook lately. I finally figured out how to do it. I'm a techno idiot. I really am. But I figured it out. And Clayton, don't nod. You don't know if I'm telling the truth about that or if I'm a genius on this machine. You don't really know that. Don't nod. It's not.
You know, he is a technical whiz. It's just crazy. He'll go on and on and on about whatever.
So it's not really even nodding. It was more gloating.
Pretty much.
Yeah, no, that's fine. That's fine. I know what I'm dealing with here now. Okay.
I'm a bit of an Android addict.
Android is my nickname. Christine, my sister Android. Christine calls me Android. You know, like I'm artificial intelligence or something, you know. Oh, she's so funny. But I've been called worse, so I'm okay with it. All right, do we have more questions? We only have 20 minutes.
Yes, okay. I have a really good one for you that this one really strikes me. How do you feel about profiting off spirit activity in places like Pinehurst?
Well, I understand that, you know, if somebody's invested what they've got in this world into a place like that so that they can open it up for other people to have that experience, then I think, you know, it was very expensive for us to get in there that night. I paid just like everybody else did, you know, it was not about coming there to investigate with me, the celebrity, blah, blah, blah. You know, I paid too, because it costs money to maintain these places, especially these very large places. And so I understand that. I don't even consider it profiting, really. I mean, these people don't make enough money keeping, you know, to most of the money. I have found most people that do paranormal investigations, most people that, you know, have places like this, they're subsidizing it out of their own pocket and they're working 40, 50 hours a week at a real job in order to keep this open, in order to be able to do what they do for other people. You know, that's been mostly my experience. And I'm okay with it. You know, I don't think that they're doing anything wrong. I think that they're providing a service. And when you're, you know, either creating something or you're providing a service for someone, you should expect to be compensated for your time and your trouble and your energy and your knowledge and your, you know, I mean, when I go and do a lecture, a lot of times I do them for free, you know, if they're local or they're close by or, you know, and I could just go and I sell my books and, you know, that's my income. That's my livelihood. And sometimes I get paid and I appreciate that very much. And I always put all of myself into every event that I do. I don't offer any apology for being compensated for my time and my knowledge.
I'm seeing Audrey says, but what about wanting to help spirits but signing a document agreeing not to cross them over? And before you answer that, Audrey, where has you signed a document agreeing to that? Because now I want to know.
A lot of places make you sign a document. If you go in, if you do removal, or if you cross spirits over, they will make you sign a document not doing it, because then you're messing with their profit.
Well,
yeah,
I've not encountered anything like that. If that was going on behind the scenes, I don't know. I never signed a waiver for anything ever going into any of these locations that I'm aware of or have any memory of. In terms of crossing, I don't know if it's necessarily our job or our place to convince a spirit to leave a realm in which they might feel that they belong. We don't know enough about what all of this is I think, to presume that it's our job, our responsibility, our privilege, our whatever. I think it's presumptuous of us to, you know, go into a haunted location and say to everybody, go to the light now, go to the light. You know, and I can understand somebody who's got, you know, a bona fide haunted location saying, please don't make my spirits go to God. You know, I mean, either way, I think that it's a safe assumption that they're where they belong at any given point in time. And that it's highly plausible that there are some places where spirit is communicating with people as actively as it possibly can. And I say it in the large, you know, the group, not just individually, but as a whole, to teach us, you know, to communicate with us in such a way, to make their presence known in such a way that we understand more incrementally, and compiling of evidence ultimately understand more about whether it be the fourth dimension or, you know, the nether world, whatever you want to label it as. Proof, empirical evidence of the existence of another dimension. Well, there are actually many, many dimensions, more than we could ever count. And this universe is big and getting bigger by the moment. We know nothing. I think it's very presumptuous of people to go in and say, okay, well, I sense the presence of a little girl here and she needs to go and be with her mother on the other side and go be with God. You know, I mean, it's, I hate to say this, but and I'm sure I'm going to piss somebody off, but it seems very ignorant to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Audrey wants to know, have you ever been called to assist in a residential haunting?
No. No, and I don't think that I really want to be. I mean, I've even had offers to do shows, you know, like national shows based around me doing that. You know, Andrea Perrin, paranormal counselor, going from family to family to family to help them through their crisis. And I've turned those offers down. You know, that's not my bag. I'm pretty much not so much a hands-on, but more of a from the neck up girl. And I just don't want to. He's doing it again. He's making noises and futzing with his phone. I'm watching him. Sarge, jump him. Jump. It's not something I'm really interested in doing, Jen. It's too complicated. It's too convoluted. And I think that it's wrought with peril. And there are an awful lot of people out there that would do anything for their 15 minutes of fame and want you to come and bring a camera crew and, you know, film the interview and make sure that they... It's just so convoluted. This, you know, this whole field is. I would really like to see the vast majority of the work done in this field done in terms of intellectual pursuit, banter, you know, between scientists who want, you know, to... who know beyond the shadow of a doubt that what we perceive as magic or supernatural or whatever is actually science that we have not grasped yet, that we cannot comprehend yet, you know, yes. And focus our energy and our attention in a more academic way around this field instead of boo who goes there. And I think that it's really way past time that we get past that proclivity in this field.
Absolutely. Tink is saying that her daughter just watched The Conjuring and she is age 16. She loves her horror movies. And she's wondering, what kind of advice would you give to someone that young who wants to speak to the dead?
My sister Christine, I just heard her in my off in the corner, and she said too young. And I think that that's too young to watch that film. It's R-rated for a reason. Maybe she's very mature for her age and she's fascinated, but, you know, kids that age and even younger, many younger have seen that film. And it's good for its chills and its thrills, but what my concern is that they're going to buy into it, that the imagery is so strong, that it leaves an impression in their minds, not only of a story that didn't happen that way at all. I mean, fictionalized to the extent that it bears no actual resemblance to our story. But it also, the film inadvertently put out some erroneous messages around paranormal activity, including representing my family as somehow godless heathens, when nothing could have been further from the truth. And so I'm afraid that because a child who's so impressionable will read the words based on a true story or based on the true case files of blah, 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 that they just take it as gospel. If she's really interested in knowing what happened, I'd say first and foremost, enjoy your childhood a while more and then read my books when you're ready to do that. Because it is essentially a love story with a supernatural twist. It's not a horror story. And some would dispute that and argue the point because some of the things that happened in the house were, you know, pretty extreme, more extreme than anything that appeared in The Conjuring. But that's the real truth. And at that age, it's very difficult to distinguish one from the other, fact from fiction. So I would encourage this child's parents to steer her into the academic end of study of this field, if this is something that she's interested in.
Mm-hmm. Good advice. And we only have like 5 minutes left. And my question that I've wanted to know is, how is it going with working on I know that you've been turning your trilogy into movies. How is that going? Where are we at with that?
Well, I am working on the second screenplay. I hope to be done with that within the next couple of months. By that time, I'm hoping that all the legal stuff and contractual stuff and all of that stuff, that end of it, is resolved and, to my satisfaction. And then we'll start storyboarding and, you know, drawing up the plans and how we're going to do this, where we're going to shoot it. And then, of course, casting comes. I signed an original letter of intent with a producer in November of 2007. And The Conjuring came out in 2013. So it takes a long time to make movies. We're actually on the fast track. And I'm hoping that by the end of this year or the beginning of next year, we'll have a shoot schedule and we'll be ready to take off with that, because the films need to be shot back to back, all, you know, pretty much at once. But I feel very good about all the people that I've got in place around this project, and that God is smiling upon me, as it were. The spirits are smiling upon me in terms of telling their real true story. I think it's as important to them as it is to us.
Yes, I think so too. I think so too. I can't wait to see it. So I'm like, hurry up, hurry up. You look very tired, but hurry up.
Yeah, I am very tired, but it's only because Clayton is on my last raw nerve with that phone.
He's watching the chat.
Has worn me down with his new blue phone.
No, this is my old phone. My new phone is on Skype right now.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, maybe that's where all the dinky noises have been coming from, because it's certainly not me. but I, you know, I so appreciate having this time with you guys. It's it feels like old home week when I'm with you all. Sarge is fabulous. He's very quiet, but he's very fabulous. Clayton's just a doll baby. I would pinch those cheeks purple if I had the opportunity.
He's in Georgia.
I know. He's close enough. He is. He's close enough. I might have to contact him.
You might turn around and see him at the store one day, and you'd be like, I gotcha.
No, I would say, I knew you were going to stalk me. That's the first thing that I would say to him. I knew it. I count on my stalkers. You know, there's a lot of different ways to build a fan base. And Jen, you know I love you madly. And, you know, Audrey brought me to you, and I will always be in her debt for that, for bringing all of you into my life. This is, every time is wonderful, every time.
I just enjoy you so much. Thank you so much, Andrea. And I hope you'll come back on again another time.
I will.
And yes, it'll be awesome. It'll be awesome.
I will come back anytime you want me to come back.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. Can you tell the listeners where they can find you and your books online?
I'm invisible. I have a cloaking device. So I'm not really to be found. No, I'm everywhere. I'm everywhere. Google my name. You can find me in 1,000 different places. But the best, fastest way to be in touch with me and to know what's going on around the stories and everything is to follow me on Facebook. You can follow me on my personal page, or you can jump in on the Buttercup Brigade, which is my fan page, which is an awesome place in cyberspace. I have a page, A World Awakening, which is archived my shows with George and all kinds of great stuff there. And I've got another page too. Oh my God, what is it? Oh my God. In a Flicker. I have an In a Flicker page and House of Darkness, House of Light. So there's 5 places that you can connect with me on Facebook or Twitter at Bathsheba1680. That's my handle on Twitter. And that's, you know, I'm everywhere. It's easy to find me, actually.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. And with that, we're at the end of the show. I want to thank everybody for tuning in tonight and asking all your awesome questions. Thank you, Andrea, for coming on. Andrea Parent, everybody. And Clayton, thanks for annoying Andrea. And
he did it so well. So yes, well. Yes. Perfection.
And thank you, Sarge. Thank you, Para X. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Night.